overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
With the sound of the bell. They call it the mindfulness bell. We have the opportunity to stop and to open to the sacred moment. My Zen calendar on January 1st was the Buddha, and he said, all we have is the moment. And when we open to the present moment and come from a place of an awakened awareness, well, then we step out of the local mind into the non-local mind. We step out of the me consciousness and we enter into the we consciousness. And then we realize it's not about us. It's never been about us. It's about this presence, this life, the life of the one, awakening within the individual, seeming individual, so that we might relate to one another not as other, but as self. In the month of January 2022, I'm going to explore the simple idea, how then shall we live? It was Rilke that said, court the question. The mind is alive in a question. So many of us suffer from the tyranny of conclusions, but the question opens us up to a field of possibilities. How then shall we live, knowing that we shall die? Then every breath is on loan from the universe. And it's the one breath breathing us. This morning on the Zen calendar, it was Emily Dickinson. And she said, forever is made out of now. And so we're brought back to present moment awareness. And we rest in this vibration. I hear Ram Dass saying, be here now. To be fully present in this present moment. That was his first book, and his last book was Be Love Now. So he had evolved from a stopping and opening to present moment awareness to a realization that all there is love. And it's not the personal love as much as it is the divine love. And so he's inviting us to be that love now. Now, when you stay in the question, what is this thing called love? You can smile to the question. When we're young, we think love is associated with another human being. And then we fall into the trap of attachment and expectation and projection until we don't. Until we realize that love arises and shows up when you least expect it. The title of today's talk is "We're All in This Together." How blessed it is to know that we're not separate and that we need each other. As Rumi would say, we need each other to walk each other home. And so every Sunday, my job is to take your soul and to walk it home to a place that is always there. But sometimes we forget it. In the Quran, it says, when you remember him, he remembers you. When you remember divine love awakens within you. When you remember this awakened presence awakens within you, and you begin to know yourself as that. So I invite you to explore the spaciousness where we meet, that field of consciousness that is undifferentiated by the local self. It's as if the drop has fallen into the ocean and it no longer identifies as the drop, but it realizes that it is the ocean of love and we are all that ocean of love. And so rather than form an idea around that, allow the metaphor to work on you. And hear the admonition, be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind. And so this new year, we're going to have a new consciousness, a new mind, a new way of being in this world. The new class that's starting this Wednesday is called Awakening the World, from my Sufi teacher, Llewellyn Van Lee. And the premise is that we have to see with new eyes. See with the eyes of oneness. And to recognize that we are the world, that we're not separate. Not only are we not separate from source, but we're not separate from each other. My beloved Kim Brown called me on New Year's Day to wish me Happy New Year. And she reflected on the deer in her backyard and how she's become so enamored of the deer. And there was a snake at the office place. And she's terrified of snakes, but she gave the snake a name. She called him Slim. And before you know it, she and the snake started having a relationship. And then she said her daughter Abby found a little mouse in the house. But she named the mouse Fiona. And now Fiona has a little wheel that she runs around on, all because she recognized that it's all our relations, all our children, all part of this tapestry called life, and we're in this together. Not as a superior species and an inferior one, but as one life, God's life. And we open to that exploration in 2022 with fresh eyes. So when you're ready to open your eyes, I invite you to enter into this space with me. It's so nice to see people I haven't seen in a while. Very soon I'll be handing out financial records. My husband has been compiling them. And he asks me, do you ever see so-and-so? Do you ever see so-and-so? And I'll bring the form to you maybe next week. And And I said, normally I don't see different people. Well, now I'm seeing the people that I don't see. So if you do come next week, I'll have your financial statements. And Trey wanted me to tell you that. Another announcement is that the class I mentioned is starting this Wednesday. It's an 8-week class. It's based on Llewellyn Von Lee's book, Awakening the World. There's a sign up sheet in there. And I'll just need your email address, and Jody would send you an invitation. And the class is from 10 to 11:30. And we're going to explore how to see through the eyes of oneness. And it's a class that I hadn't been ready to teach up until now. But now all I want to teach is from a different place. I was sharing with the Revealing Circle this morning that when I was a brand new student of truth in 1989, a very old, he was probably my age, minister in the New York City church befriended me. So it's the old with the young. And they say a young minister should always have an older one to inspire them, and an older one should have a younger one to inspire them. So we would get together every year, and he shared with me that we as a spiritual teaching have to evolve. And he said, our teaching is on three levels. He says, there is a mental science, and that's the most primitive, where you change your thinking, you change your life. And in a way, you feel like you're manipulating the universe by planting seeds of intention and manifesting results, only to realize that doesn't really get you far. I mean, it's just the power of positive thinking, creative imagination, Shakti Gawain's book. But then he said, David, the second level is a religious science. And he says, that's where there's a power for good and you can use it. Again, seeming duality. You've got a power and you're using it for a greater good in the world. But he said to me in his sage-like wisdom, he says, David, we have to evolve to the third place where it's the mystical science, where there's only one here, and that one is awakening within the individual. And he says, that can be foreign to somebody because we're so used to having me and my belief system, and really, ultimately, there is no me that's separate from other. Now, that's a hard one for people to grasp. My prayer partner told me, and he's now in Victoria, British Columbia, he's to be speaking in the White Rock Church. He's now retired. And he says, they gave me the subject. And the subject was called Courting the Question, or Always Live in the Question. And he says, wouldn't it be wonderful if instead of having all the answers, we could be open to possibility? And that's why this new class is so important, because Llewellyn has the premise that the soul of the world needs to awaken. It's not about the individual awakening, but it's about everything on the planet awakening. And when we see it as our own self, we actually contagion it. And it's exciting to live in possibility. So in this wonderful book, How Then Shall We Live, which I've taught many times by Wayne Mueller, it's a beautiful, beautiful book that lives again in the question. And he premises the whole book on four questions. The first question is, who am I? And you know, that's was Ramana Maharshi that had a practice called Vaichara. And the practice of Vaichara was only one thing. You ask, who am I? And then you ask, who am I? And you stay in the question. And ultimately, by asking the who am I question, first you'll say, oh, I'm David Leonard, I'm a minister, I'm a husband, I'm a this. Now, ultimately, that's all the dream, that's the illusion, that's who I've identified as. But when you realize that I am that, ta tuam asi, thou art that, thou art the one life, the one love, the one truth unveiling itself, that you are the very presence of the universe, well, kind of blows you away. So he says, first of all, we have to get clear, who am I? Then the second question he courts in this beautiful book is, what do I love? There was a wonderful book that Trey and I read in our early 30s when we were floundering. And the title of the book was, Do What You Love and the Money Will Follow. It was Joseph Campbell that told his students to follow your bliss. So what do you love? What excites you? I realized that as a young, there was a thing on Turner Classic Movies about the dance, and it showed the history of dance. And I'm a dancer, and I knew that from the time I was a little kid. So they showed the spirituality of people in Africa going around a thing with the drum beat, how it's innate in our thing to feel the movement. And then it showed the origins of ballet and of tap and how they're sculpting space with their body. And I actually awoke spiritually on a dance floor when the choreographer said, all movement is discovered, it's not invented. And that simple act when I was 25 years of age took me into my master's thesis, which was on the anatomy of inspiration, which took me into this discovery place of that something that comes through. So what if we get to say, what do we love? And let that guide us. that this divine love is taking us there. Another thing that I love is gardening. And the thing about gardening is when you nurture, you're nurtured. There's nothing more, and Gigi knows this, there's nothing more fulfilling than to meet the plants that you put in the ground and to watch them get big. They're like your children. So the second question is, what do you love? The third question was the title of the book, How Then Shall You Live? How then shall you live? It's a great question. You know, we're starting a new year. I don't do resolutions, but I do set intentions. So how then shall I live? With intention. The intention to be more peaceful, to be more loving, to be more helpful. Pam Hurdy quoted the Dalai Lama this morning, and he said, my intention is to just be happy and to be of service. So could we find an intention? How then shall we live, knowing that we're all connected? There was a documentary that was very disturbing on BBC. I find myself watching the BBC more than local news, and it was called The World in Crisis, and it was all about our planet. And it was a Harvard professor saying, we as a species may not survive because we're pretty unskillful how we've abused the planet. And then he starts looking at the global warming situation and the carbon dioxide emissions. And when did we go awry? And he said it started with the Industrial Revolution, when we started with factories and polluting the environment, and then, you know, the carbon going into the thing and changing the climate on the planet. And then he says the saving grace, this is the scientist in The World in Crisis, are our trees. The trees absorb 25% of the carbon, but unfortunately we're destroying the rainforests and we're cutting down the trees. And basically the premise is we're all in this together. And then the scientists, they're sounding more like the mystics, they say, what if the highest species are the plants themselves, because they know how to adapt? So ironically, we as the human species may not survive, but the plants will, and the fungus will, and the forms that have learned to co-create and collaborate are the ones that are going to survive. So something very disturbing was, in a strange sort of way, giving me hope. Now the last question Wade Mueller asks is then, so once you say, how am I going to live? The question is, are you willing to bring your gifts to planet Earth? What are your gifts? One of the gifts that Gina and I bring is we bring the gift of hope. We bring the gift of possibility. We bring the gift of truth. My teacher Kennedy Schultz says, we're not here to comfort the afflicted. We're here to afflict the comfortable. So sometimes we have to be willing to stand up to ignorance. You know, I saw this wonderful documentary about a minister who's Lutheran and also gay, an evangelical gay Lutheran minister, and how he had to go through so much to evolve to a place where he could forgive the Christian church that had condemned him and all the other young gay people, saying you're an abomination in God's eyes. He said, how could we, as a teaching that's supposed to be based on love, condemn our young brothers and sisters who choose to be gay? And they don't really choose it, because you're born this way. It's not something you choose. I remember my brother-in-law said, I chose this and I could choose to be something else. And I said, I'm sorry, but I was born this way. And he didn't agree with me. So Wayne Mueller, you know, the Zen calendar is the most wonderful thing. And if you find something that really resonates with you, this is Rumi. He says, the moment you accept what troubles that you've been given, well, then the doorways open. It's not about running away from the trouble. It's not running away from the darkness. My prayer partner had to do a workshop at the Unity Church, and he went in doing a workshop called Embracing Our Demons. And he had the powers on the board sitting with their arms crossed. What do you mean, embracing the demons? We condemn the demons. We eradicate the demons. We get rid of the demons. And he says, no, you need to embrace the demons. You need to embrace the shadow. You need to embrace the fear. And then the fear is no longer subversive in your life. Rumi's saying the same thing. When you take your troubles. So this is what he says at the very end of the book about the gifts. He says, the greatest gift is to allow ourselves to feel fully alive in this sea of life, moving with the tides of loving kindness as they move into us, through us, and out of us into others, only to return again and again. To practice the art of loving kindness. The kindness of others will fertilize our soul. They become a part of who we are, and we carry them and their love within us. We feel this when people die, how their gifts remain alive in us. You know, the beautiful thing about the question, how then shall we live knowing that we will die, is who we are doesn't die. The body dies. And so he concludes the book with a poem about how we never die. Every time Jan walks in, I see Charlie Johnson there. I see Paul there. I see Joe there. I mean, it's kind of crazy. I see, when I walk into the classroom and I see that teddy bear, I see Bert. And he's saying, well, you know, I'm sitting here waiting for you. This was my sacred place. I come and, you know, and so here's what the little poem at the end says. If you cannot give me away, oh, when I die, give what's left of me to children and old men that wait to die. And if you need to cry, cry for your brother walking the streets beside you. And when you need me, put your arms around somebody and give them what you need to give to me. He says, I want to leave you something better than words or sounds, so look for me in the people that you've known and loved. And if you cannot give me away, at least let me live in your eyes and not on your mind. And you can love me most by letting hands touch hands, by letting bodies touch bodies, and by letting go of children that need to be free. Love doesn't die, people do. And what we are is love itself. All there is love. So that when all that's left of me is love, well then give me away. And I will see you at home in the earth. And so the very last sentence of this beautiful book is, he says, we are part of this love. And we are here, alive on earth. We receive this love and we give this love. We receive the care of so many. And we too, in our life and in our death, open our hand so that the gifts may fertilize joy, kindness, and healing for ourselves and for our family on planet Earth. He says, for our family on planet Earth. It's all our family. I loved it when Kim said her daughter had a little mouse. She said the mouse lasted 4 years. She said, I thought mice had a short lifespan, but Fiona was so happy she didn't want to leave the planet. So what if we could even have a relationship with something as simple as a little mouse? I reminded Kim that Cinderella befriended the mice, and they took her to the ball. And then she says, oh, I'll have to tell Abby that. That'll make her smile. So, yeah, this is a beautiful opportunity for all of us to enter into the question, how then shall we live? And wait for the response. And to ask, are you going to live from this place, or are you going to live from a shaming place that said you should do this, you should get that? What if the shoulder falls away and there is this kind of unfolding, this evolutionary opening within the soul that knows that we are an eternal being and we're here to collaborate, which means to co-labor, to give birth together to a new order of being on planet Earth. Barbara Marx Hubbard, she wrote the introduction to this beautiful book, and she's an evolutionary thinker. And she said, we are here to evolve into what she calls Homo Universalis, the universal human, the one that doesn't see themselves as separate in a label, but as something that's included, inclusive. Can you imagine to perceive yourself as a universal human? I find that so, so exciting. This Friday, we had our World Peace Meditation, and thank those of you who came at 6 a.m. It takes place at the same hour on the planet, so that supposedly millions of people come together at one time to lend their consciousness to this emerging awareness that it begins with us. And the way the opening prayer started, the opening meditation, was to know that ourselves, we are light beings. And when you identify as the light, your light merges with the light all around the planet. It's the one light. Now, the Sufis say we come here with light and love. When we leave, we take the light with us, and we leave the love behind. Again, we're eternal beings. We're so much more than form. My friend Baba Jake sent me a book called The Yugas, and it gave me hope for this new year. There are no accidents. He also sent me a little book by Sri Yukteswar. And Yukteswar was the guru of Paramahansa Yogananda. And in 1895, Sri Yukteswar wrote a little book called The Science of Religion. Interesting. And in that little book, he contends that all religion, without exception, is here to take us to the same place, to that awakened realization that all there is this something. We can call it God. We can call it love. We can call it universal truth. And it begins to awaken when the individual is ready. And he says, once we get glimpses of that, the paradigm shifts. And so in this book called The Yugas, they say, we are moving out of the dark Kali Yuga, which we've been living through since, I think it's like 600 BC. And that's when the darkness hit the planet, when we had a patriarchal religion, when we had a god that would destroy everyone and give us a rainbow. That was the Kali Yuga. It was not a very evolved time. It's a time of war. It's a time of separation. It's a time of prejudice and violence. But we're coming out of the Kali Yuga into a more enlightened time, when the possibility and the potential to awaken humanity to a spiritual realization is possible now. And so that gave me hope. It has to start with us. And you know, at 73 years of age, I've watched how I have evolved out of a mental science student of truth into a mystic who recognizes I'm one with the mouse and the bird and the fish in the pond. That it's all part of me. Every time I tend the garden, I'm really tending my own soul. And I see you as all aspects of the garden that we're all together in. And so what if we're each one of us individually giving birth to that Homo Universalis? It requires a resurrection. And in order to have a resurrection, you have to have a death. There has to be a willingness to die to an idea of who we thought we were so that we can give birth to this emerging something that would have us know ourselves as one. There's beloved Serena Sage. So it's nice to see you all here. The Kali Yuga. You know, it's funny, in that book on the Yugas, they talked about previous civilizations and how there was a time on the planet when we were evolved, when we recognized oneness. It was almost like when the feminine was running the planet, where love was connecting us. The indigenous people have known that for a long time. They recognize that we're all connected in this web of life. There's a book called Original Wisdom, Raoul and I have it, and it's based on what the indigenous people knew. It was, there are no accidents. Years and years ago, I met a young woman named Elizabeth Jenkins, and she came to the center where we were before. And she was a psychologist in San Francisco, and she was getting her PhD in psychology. But she said the most disturbing thing was, is they don't have a label for a healthy person. Everybody had a pathological label. Bipolar, you name it, everybody's got a label. And she says, there's got to be a place where we don't label people. So she found herself, through synchronicity, down in Peru, and she was studying with the Incas. And she came back to the States, and all of a sudden, how then shall we live? She was around, she wrote a book on the wisdom of the Inca people. And she came to our center to teach us. And I thought, what was so beautiful in this religion, that's not a religion, in this spiritual path, they say there's only one rule. Oh, don't you love it? And the rule for the Incas is called sacred reciprocity. And that says, is if you've been blessed, it's contingent on you to give back in another way. You know, how can you bring your gifts to the world? And then in the Inca spirituality, and I was reflecting on the depth and the wisdom, they say that there's not positive energy. This takes down religious science. There's no positive energy and negative energy. You don't have a positive thought versus a negative thought. She says, we don't go there. She says there's heavy energy and there's lighter energy. And she says the heavy energy is called hucha. And the hucha, you can almost feel the hucha. The hucha is the anger, the resentment, the fear, hucha. And she says the good thing about hucha is our planet is Pachamama. And she says Pachamama loves your hucha. So in the Inca tradition, you go to a tree and you give the tree your hucha. You don't say, you want to hear about my hucha? No, I don't want to hear your hucha, Jan. You can go on and on. I say, go give your hucha to a tree. I have a t-shirt that Charlie Johnson, her husband, gave me, and you see a bear hugging a tree, and it says, go hug a tree. So, yeah, so you give your hucha to a tree, or whatever, give it to nature, and then the other energy is called Sami. It's the light energy. It's the rarefied energy. It's the joy. It's the optimism. It's the hope gene. And they say, you let the Sami come in, and you let the hucha go out. Now, isn't that civilized and simple? How uncomplicated, how profound. The indigenous people knew it all along. So if we have a religion that's filled with hucha, you don't need a religion filled with hucha. You need a religion filled with Sami, with this rarefied energy of spirit coming through. So I thought I'd share that one. Henry David Thoreau, he was like one of the indigenous people, and he was in Concord, Massachusetts, when everybody was going through the transcendental movement, and he decided to retreat from the world, and he built a little shack on Walden Pond. And this was the intention that he went to at Walden Pond. I love this. He said, I went to the woods because I wished to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life, and to see if I could not learn what life had to teach me, what nature had to teach me, and not, when I came to die, to discover that I had not lived my life. He said, I did not wish to live what was not a life. Living is so dear, nor did I wish to practice resignation. Unless it was quite necessary, he said, I wanted to live deep and to suck out the marrow of this life. What an intention. I wanted to live deep, to suck the marrow out of the life I've been given, and to live it deliberately, to live it with intention. My sweet husband on my birthday gave me a book, and it was called Grace in Aging. And it's a delicious book. I mean, so good you want to eat it. And it's told from the Zen tradition. And in that book, at the very end, she talks about the five gifts to stay eternally young and to not age. And the first gift is the gift of intention. To ask the question. So you might ask, and it was Wayne Dyer that wrote a book called The Power of Intention. So what if your intention is to commit to a spiritual path? What if your intention is to honor your body and to practice healthy living and eating? What if your intention is to be kind to someone and to know that what you sow is what you're going to reap? One of the great gifts, she said, is the gift of intention, to show up life, to live it deliberately, to consciously choose your spiritual path, to choose how you're going to find your way in the world. Are you going to take a safe, resigned way and not live your life, or are you going to suck the marrow out of it and enjoy the life that we've all been given? The second gift, she said, is attention. So it starts with intention, the gift of intention. Your intention is obviously to keep your spiritual path growing because you've been showing up here. Look at Serena. Year after year, she keeps coming back. There's that elephant calendar in there. I thought of you when I hung it. Her first lover was an elephant. I'm saying that with all due love for her because she knows what I'm talking about. Yeah. So what if the intention is to open to the mystery of love when it comes in its many disguises? Now, the second gift, she said, is the gift of attention. Now, my teacher, Kennedy Schultz, said the most valuable possession we have is our attention. It's a powerful little statement. What are you putting your attention on? Because what you put your attention on grows. The Bible says, whatsoever things are lovely and of good report, think on these things. So could we put our attention on the good that's happening on planet Earth? You know, the people that are planting the trees, that are saving. I saw that some divers are literally planting coral in the coral reefs to keep them alive. You know, so their attention is on how can we help save the planet and not how can we gloom and doom, ain't it awful kind of thing. So attention is the second gift. The third gift was interesting. She said it's the gift of ease. Now Jesus said to be like the lilies of the field, they toil not, neither do they struggle, yet Solomon in all his splendor was not arrayed as one of these. What he was saying is a lily doesn't have to struggle to bloom. And you know why it's ease? Because when you're living the life correctly, you're not the doer. It literally unfolds. It's effortless. It's easy. Does a tree struggle? No. And so he said, the third gift is ease. Relationships, you know, Trey and I have been together for 46 years and we never fight. I don't understand relationships that are so turbulent because ours is so easy. I've asked him, how is it that our relationship is so easy? The universe is calling, which is a reminder to turn your phone off. I do that every Sunday for myself. So the third gift is ease. The fourth gift is joy. Sweet joy. Alan Cohen wrote a little book called Let Joy Be Your Compass. And in that book, he starts off by telling about his guru. And his guru was named Molly, and she was 5 years old. And he was speaking at some center, and he was staying in the guest bedroom. You know, that's what they do. They put the minister up in the guest bedroom. And in walks little Molly at 7 a.m. And he says, well, good morning, Molly. And she says, good morning. And he says, so what are your plans for the day? And she said, play. All I do is play. And he said, in that holy instant, I realized that here was my guru saying to be joyful, to let joy lead your day. So one of the great gifts is the gift of joy. And then the last gift that this Zen teacher says is the gift of curiosity, to stay curious, to stay teachable. Ernest Holmes calls the universe, he calls God the totality of possibilities. Now, isn't that rich with curiosity? What do you mean, the totality of possibilities? Imagine if we could all live together in harmony and peace. You know, we're all in this together. Could we know that anytime we do something for something less than us, we're really, seemingly less than us, we're really doing it for ourselves because there's no separation. So then every dog that Serena rescues or every cat or every plant, people used to throw their old plants in my driveway because they know that I would either put it in the compost or put it in the ground. So many people threw irises in my driveway and Hemerocallis, daylilies, I have a whole basket of daylilies, so I'd either bring them to the center, because they're all life. I have a husband that rescues earthworms when the rain comes, and he sees them in the streets, and he puts them over to the side of the grave, because he's connected. So years ago, I taught this book called More Together Than Alone by Mark Nepo. And in this book, he concludes by showing a photograph of a young boy after World War II. He'd been the victim of bombings, so he had lost his arms, he was blind, and in the photograph, this is 1948, it shows the young boy kissing, well, it looks like he's kissing a book, but what he is he's trying to read Braille with his lips because he doesn't have fingers to touch the Braille. And so Mark Nepo tries to help us see that we have to embrace our darkness, our demons, if we're going to meet the light. And this is how he references this photograph of the young boy. And he says, the moment seems to say, looking at the young boy, that if we could just kiss what we're given, our difficulties would show us how to read the signs of life. Remember, his lips are on the page where the Braille is. And he says, but there's more in this telling moment of this young boy. Starkly, we are responsible for everything in that photograph. He says, we are the dark ones who create the war. And we are the strong ones who clean up the ruins. We are the exhausted ones who keep rebuilding the world after we've destroyed it. And we are the bewildered boy, born into a world beyond his control. And we are the violent ones who cause him to lose his arms. And we are the determined ones who create the Braille for him to read with his lips. And we are the kind ones who set up the worn table in the ruins that he comes to. And we are the compassionate ones who turn the pages for him. And we are the relentless witness traveling vast distances to photograph all that is human. We have to be willing to embrace our darkness if we're going to find our light, is what he's saying here. We're all in this together. We're better together than alone, the title of the book. So he says, we contain and grow these destinies, the destiny to be creative and the destiny to be destructive. That's Shiva. The destiny to be resilient, and also the destiny to bear witness to our shortcomings. In each generation, everything depends on what we choose while we're here. The whole book is about the necessity of choosing love over fear, of choosing the big raft of oneness over the little raft of me and my country, of accepting that we are interdependent creatures who, given the chance, will make honey out of our suffering. I keep saying it like a prayer. I don't quite understand it, but we are more together than alone. So perhaps the best of community comes down to this simple thing, taking turns being blind and taking turns seeing. As we tumble through all life and what life has to offer us, surviving the ruins, clearing out the rubble, and learning to read the signs of life as we help each other up again and again and again. I wanted to close this talk today. A young lady, her name is Amanda Gorman, she read a poem last year at the inauguration. She's a young black girl. This was after the insurrection on January 6th, and it was on January 22nd. And the title of her poem was, We Rise Together. It was about recognizing the darkness, and out of the darkness comes the light. And I'm going to read you a little excerpt of her poem and then take you into the closing meditation. This is Amanda Gorman. She's speaking at the inauguration. She says, we are the successors of a country and a time where a skinny black girl who is descended from slaves and raised by a single mother can dream of becoming president, only to find herself today reciting 4-1. She's jokingly said that by the year 2036, she'll be old enough to run for president. And she set a dream to run for president. I think that's so sweet. So here's her intention. And yes, we are far from polished as a country, far from pristine. But that doesn't mean we are striving to form a union that is perfect. We are striving to forge our union with purpose, to compose a country committed to all cultures and colors and characters and conditions of man. And so we lift our gaze, not to what stands between us, but what stands before us. We close the divide because we know to put our future first, we must then first put our differences aside. We lay down our arms so that we can reach out our arms to one another. What a beautiful phrase. We seek harm to no one and harmony for everyone. So I'm skipping over near the end of the talk. She says, we will not march back to what was, but we move to what shall be for a country that is bruised, but whole and benevolent and bold, fierce and free. We will not be turned around or interrupted by intimidation, because we know our inaction and our inertia will be the inheritance for the next generation, which is my generation. Our blunders become their burdens. But one thing is certain, if we merge mercy with might and might with right, then love becomes our legacy and change is our children's birthright. Huh. Last week I gave you that beautiful equation that says hope plus action equals change. And so she concludes this poem by saying, together we will rise. Together we will rise from the gold-limbed hills of the West Coast. We will rise from the windswept Northeast, where our forefathers first realized a revolution. We will rise from the lake-rimmed cities of the Midwestern states, and we will rise from the sun-baked South. We will rebuild and reconcile and recover in every known nook of our nation and in every corner called our country. Our people are diverse and beautiful, and they will emerge battered but beautiful. And when day comes, we step out of the shade of flame and unafraid. The new dawn blooms as we free it, for there is always light. If we only are brave enough to see it, if only we're brave enough to be it, we're in this together, and we shall rise up as one life dedicated to the proposition that all are created equal. And so I'm going to do the metaphorical bell. Ding. You don't have to run back, Raoul. He's so sweet. That's his job. And so we take those beautiful words of Amanda Gorman. Together we rise up to create a new level of consciousness. And the bell takes us into that space of awake awareness. How then shall we live? What do we love? Who are we? And what gifts do we bring to this world? And as we live in the fertile question, we become curious how our soul will respond. What intentions we will make as we go into this new life experience. Maybe it's an intention to be kind and helpful, like the Dalai Lama said. Maybe it's an intention to be here now in a sacred moment and to rebuild. Maybe it's the intention when we see someone that disturbs us to realize that they're in pain. And so then we embrace them and their darkness and bring the light and the peace. We get to reflect on what we put our attention on. Every time the bell rings, I find myself putting my attention on the heart space where love abides, a love that includes all and excludes none. We begin to witness the ease of just sitting in this present moment, how the breath is breathing us. We don't even have to do that. Our heart is beating. We don't have to do that. And so being and doing begin to merge, where we end up doing our being. Being the love that we are. Being the peace that we are. Being the hope that we bring to the planet. Being the one that we've been waiting for. And so we get curious this Sunday morning. Where is the universe showing up for you? my Sufi teacher, the one that we are going to be covering in the class, he used to say, be vigilant. Be attentive to the moment. The Beloved is always revealing herself to us in every unfolding moment, in every breath. And when we become still, we can know ourselves as the stillness itself. And so we come here on Sundays to go home. And we share the same home. This home is an inside job, and it's also the outside job. We have this beautiful planet, Pachamama. She is our mother, and she holds us. And so we can give her our hucha as much as we want, but now it's time to give her our love. Give her our best intentions. We're in this together. And if you've done it to the least of these, you've done it to me, Jesus would say. And so recognizing the God within and the God all around, join with me in the heart salutation for 2022 by saying to this ubiquitous presence of love, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
I love you.
I love you.
You are the radiant presence of the One.
Revealing her beauty.
Everywhere and in everyone.
Everywhere.
The Beloved in me bows to the Beloved in you.
In
this awareness, there is only one. Shining her light,
for all to see.
So open your eyes, open your heart, open your hands. Celebrate the life that you are. We rise together in hope, in freedom, in peace, love, and joy. And so it is. Happy New Year, everyone.
Listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.